Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Can Mayonnaise Kill a Jedi podcast. I am your host, the Artificial Dragon.
Happy Life Day. I'm your co-host, Darth Celine.
Happy Life Day, indeed. On the time of his recording, it is precisely Christmas Day, a.k.a. December 25th. I know this isn't exactly a Christmas episode by the time it gets released, but we're recording it on Christmas.
It'll still be in December.
That is very true. That is the hope before the start of a new year, this special Christmas episode gets uploaded. But yes, Merry Late Christmas, everybody. I hope everybody had a wonderful time with friends and family.
If you celebrate something else, happy Yule, happy Hanukkah, happy Kwanzaa, happy Diwali, da 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 da.
Yeah, happy holidays to everybody else that doesn't celebrate Christmas. But yeah, hope everybody's having a wonderful time. I'll be spending late Christmas with my dad tomorrow because he works today, so that's always fun. But I managed to have some breakfast with my co-host family over here, so that was nice at least.
Yeah.
And I got my, and it was an impromptu present that
impromptu.
Yeah, because originally the figurines were for you, but you already got them, so I might as well have them.
Okay, they're not just normal figurines, they're Disney Dorables.
Yeah.
I collect them because as soon as I saw the Star Wars ones, I wanted to start collecting them. Mm-hmm. And the one that my mom gave me was the eight collectibles from Phantom Menace.
Yep.
I already bought that months prior. And I looked at her and was like, I already have this. She's like, well, shit. And so the Artie showed up and, yeah.
Yeah, might as well.
I just gave it to him. It was better than her trying to find the receipt and return it.
Yeah, exactly. Poem the Grievous meme of this will make a nice addition to my collection.
Quite literally.
Yeah, exactly. I've already, for everybody that isn't in the Discord, I got a three pop figurines of Cad Bane, Grievous, and two Cad Banes actually, and a Golden Princess Leia back there. So they'll make a nice addition to my collection.
Yeah.
But yes, today is the 80th episode of a podcast. We are 20 more episodes away from our 100th episode.
100.
Yeah, 100th episode, sorry. Before we get into today's very special episode, which is also a Patreon-sponsored episode, I'm going to do a quick self-promotion for all of our content. It's our shout-out. If you love the content that we make on this podcast, we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/canmail. Once again, that's patreon.com/canmail. You can contribute to any amount, the lowest being $2 and the highest being $10. We do have a Discord server, which is free for everybody to join, but if you want us to talk about a certain character, topic, or anything in Star Wars, you could contribute to the mid-tier to the highest tier, and you will have exclusive voting rights to put in the Discord, and if it gets selected, we'll be talking about it once per month. So go ahead and contribute while you can. And unfortunately, the code Live Day is now expired, but thank you for some of the people that redeemed it. Thank you, as always.
If you did get to redeem it, lucky you. If you didn't, you're shit out of luck.
Exactly, because it's 50% off. I might do another discount code in the future, but we shall see. Also a shout out to our highest tier patrons. We have Alan Lee, Y Wolves, Dr. Emboss, Gobez, Lee Fott, Milo Khalid, Train Boy 17, and Tristan H. Thank you everybody so much for supporting our podcast by contributing to the highest tier. And welcome to this wonderful community that we have in the making. And I hope you are looking forward to more content like this.
Support Celine's Cantina.
Support Celine's Cantina. Yeah. Also, speaking of Celine, that is her newest Patreon art piece, which is her in her Live Day outfit.
I was gonna say.
Yeah.
The Patreon piece this month is me.
Yeah, she is very spicy in her Life Day outfit. Probably one of the best Patreon art pieces that we've had this year.
It looks amazing.
It is awesome, especially with the art is very first to Gruta that they are trying out with. But yeah, with anything you wanted to add before we go on to the main meat of this episode?
And ask to my blog.
Indeed. I've been sending you a couple of interesting questions, Anna.
Send me one.
Well, okay, the one, but I'm looking forward to how you respond to that. But yes, as I mentioned before, this is a special Patreon episode. This was a subject that was brought up by Mr. Trainboy17, and it's a very interesting topic. But Hannah, what are we talking about this lovely Christmas day?
The equivalent to Scrooge of the Star Wars universe, Grand Moff Tarkin.
Grand Moff Tarkin. Yeah, he is, well, calling him a Scrooge is putting it lightly.
No, I said he is essentially Scrooge.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's way more than that, but yes, Grand Moff Tarkin is indeed the Scrooge, and you should rightfully fear him.
No, not the Scrooge or a Scrooge. Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah. the original Scrooge. The yes. Ebenezer Scrooge. Yes. I absolutely love the... kind of unrelated, though, but I love the...
It's on topic of Christmas.
Yeah. I absolutely love the Muppet version of A Christmas
Carol. I do, too! It's one of the best!
You know, I've been watching a lot of videos recently about that Muppet movie, and it's a certain scene where Gonzo is trying to light the lantern. He's like, "Light the lantern, not the rat!"
Light the lamp, not the rat! Light the lamp, not the rat!
Yeah, I remember watching that movie with my grandma when I was really, really young.
I think my brother and I had it on VHS.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was just, it's a good movie. Highly recommend watching it if you haven't watched it. It's just, and Michael Caine is Ebenezer Scrooge in this. It's, especially, imagine Michael Caine, a very accomplished British actor, acting around Muppets.
Yeah. And he even said to the director, "I'm not going to play it off for comedy. I'm going to play it completely straight."
He did it completely seriously.
Exactly.
It was so good.
It is so
highly
good.
Highly recommend it.
Yeah, Michael Caine is such a good actor.
Yes, he is.
But yeah, the Christmas spirit out of the way, let me give you a nice little quote from Mr. Tarkin himself.
You always say these are little quotes, but most of the time they're paragraphs.
Well, I mean, yes. I have to go with a long quote, Hannah, because it's much more dramatic that way. But anyway. "Of power, I could tell you much, but the time is not right. I shall only say that the Empire is close to having power such as never before. Power of world-shattering proportions, you could say. Mark my words, never again will a citizen of this galaxy watch a moon rise in quite the same way. He will stare at that moon, if such it is, and remember that the Empire is firmly in control."
Nice.
Yeah, that's a nice little introduction on our good old boy, Grand Moff Tarkin. So I'm just going to say this right now, Hannah. Tarkin isn't his actual name. It's his surname because he comes from a Tarkin family.
His name is Wilhelm Tarkin.
Yeah, Wilhelm Tarkin is his full name. But yeah, Wilhelm Tarkin is one of the most powerful and arguably most infamous moths of a galactic empire. He is a leading figure in shaping the Imperial doctrines and the driving force behind the creation of its key embodiment, the Death Star. He is introduced as one of the very first antagonists of the very first movie alongside Darth Vader.
I was gonna
and all
say,
that.
Aside from Vader.
Who is played by the very accomplished actor Peter Cushing.
Yep.
He is such an amazing actor, but he's most famous for his roles in horror movies made by Hammer Production, such as playing Baron Frankenstein and Van Helsing himself.
That's cool.
Yeah, he is basically the foil to Christopher Lee.
Of course, Christopher Lee played Dracula.
Yeah.
It makes sense that Peter Cushing would play Van Helsing.
Yeah, Peter.
Man, the two were best friends behind the scenes.
Oh, absolutely. Peter Cushing is a high-class actor. Like, in the words of, this is just the film nerd in me busting out here. In the words of a Cinemassacre, Peter Cushing could act in a movie that's about rabbits shooting lasers out of his eyes. And he would play the role completely seriously.
Oh, yeah,
he's that kind of actor. But yeah,
that's an actor who takes his job seriously.
Yeah, when he was casted in Star Wars, he was originally meant to play the role of Obi-Wan.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah, it is very weird to think about.
It's hard to imagine anybody aside from
Alec Guinness
and Ewan McGregor yeah. in the role of Obi-Wan.
Exactly, yeah. So it's kind of interesting to think about. And I do believe the voice actor for Tarkin in the Rebels TV show also voiced as the old version of Obi-Wan at one point. Which I think is really cool and a nice little connection between them both.
Nice.
But yeah, also additional note, Peter Cushing also played several roles as Sherlock Holmes in Doctor Who.
Nice.
Yeah, so he's played a lot of significant characters in nerd history.
Well, not only in nerd history, but British media, too. Because Doctor Who and Sherlock Holmes are quintessential British media.
Oh, absolutely, Hannah. When he was casted in The New Hope, he was the most well-known actor at the time. Like, his salary at the time was £2,000 a day, which for, by today's perspective from inflation, would be, $2,526.03 a day.
That's not that much.
Well, I mean, this is adjusting for inflation.
I know, but
Hannah,
that's still relatively the same. It's just, as of today, it's an extra $500.
Oh, I mistranslated. Okay, so back then, it was basically the equivalent of $2,526.03 back then.
Uh-huh.
But for today, it's $22,788.82 a day.
Oh my god!
Yeah, he was a high-paying actor at the time.
I want that salary.
For comparison, the other actors who weren't as well known back then, like
Mark Hamill,
Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, they were paid weekly salaries of $1,000, which today is $5,544.69.
That's still not bad.
This is for Mark Hamill. Carrie Fisher was paid $850 weekly.
That's bullshit.
And by today's salary, that's $4,712.99, and Harrison Ford was paid $750 weekly, which by today's salary would be $4,158.52.
That sucks that Harrison made less than Carrie.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. But it was a different time back then. They're not that well known right now. Most famously, as one of our Discord moderators likes to say multiple times, Peter Cushing, during filming, was provided boots that were far too small to accommodate his size 12 feet.
And they were, like, actual, like, military boots.
Yeah, and Peter Cushing, he's like, man, these are so uncomfortable. And he's like, hey, do you have boots of larger size or something? And the costume designer's like, no, not really. And Peter Cushing's like, oh, god damn it. Hey,
I cannot work in these conditions.
He's like, hey, George Lucas, could you... You're not going to see much of anything.
You're not
going to
see
there.
My feet. Film they're not me from the waist up.
They're not going to see my feet down there. So could you just film angles where it's just my upper half? And
yeah,
George
from
Lucas,
the waist up.
Yeah, and George Lucas is like, sure. And for the entire time of when they're not filming his feet, he's just wearing comfortable slippers.
He's wearing slippers.
So that entire scene where he's intimidating the fuck out of Leia, she's trying her hardest not to laugh at his feet.
I would try my hardest, especially if he's wearing pink slippers.
Exactly.
I've seen fan art somewhere. I think it was on Tumblr.
Especially with the pink bunny slippers.
Of Tarkin just standing at attention. You know, all elegant and how he does, but then just pink bunny slippers.
He's like doing this entire speech of, you will witness the full power of the Empire. You're just trying not to laugh at him. But no, if I also remember correctly, Tarkin, he was, why am I saying Tarkin? Peter Cushing, he was looking forward to playing as Obi-Wan. But it was also kind of fortunate because that would mean he would have to film out in the middle of a fucking desert for that.
Yeah.
But he was kind of disappointed, but at the same time, he's all like, yeah, Tarkin, he's not a very good chap.
That's one way of putting it.
That is one way of putting it. But he was all like, I really like the performance that I did with Tarkin. And it's I would have loved playing as Tarkin, like, sequels or whatever, but he was kind of disappointed that Tarkin got killed in the very first movie.
Aww.
But he was still very glad with the performance that he made. He's like, this will inspire future generations, that sort of thing.
And it kind of has.
And yeah, it really did. Tarkin is a very influential character in the Star Wars franchise.
One of many.
Yeah, Peter Cushing is such a fascinating actor to talk about. If this wasn't a Star Wars podcast, I would have been rambling all day about Peter Cushing and all the shit that he does. But of course, this is about the character that he made famous. So just thought I'd throw that out there.
Going back to the film thing.
Yeah.
I've had an interest in film, but I just don't talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Britain has, especially ever since the early 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Great Britain has produced some of the best actors and actresses of our time.
Oh, absolutely, Hannah.
I mean, Claude Rains as the Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing.
Very amazing, yeah.
And, of course, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, da da da.
And so many others.
Yes.
That we don't have time to talk about today. But anyway.
Back to Tarkin.
Yeah. So that's a little bit of a behind-the-scenes story about Tarkin. Wilhelm Tarkin... I'm going to save this right now, Hannah, like I do with a lot of film characters. I'm not going to be
talking... It's the Cliff Notes.
Yeah, this is the Cliff Notes version. I don't think I could do Tarkin complete justice in one episode alone. Like, if you want more about all the in-depth shit that he does, watch Meta Nerds and his complete life video story about Tarkin. It is fascinating to listen in-depth, anyway. But yeah, Tarkin... Tarkin is definitely a very interesting character, and after refreshing myself a little bit here, I definitely see the appeal of Tarkin. He's definitely grown on me as a antagonist, a non-Sith antagonist. He's a really fascinating character.
Fair enough.
And I know you may not think of him that highly, but you may have differing opinions on him after...
I usually do after everything is said and done.
That is so. Very true. I mean, you went in completely blind with Abeloff, and you love her as an antagonist.
Yep.
But anyway, so let's go ahead and get into the meat of his episode. So Wilhelm Tarkin was born 64 years before the Battle of Yavin.
He's old as fuck.
He is old as fuck. I think he might be a little bit older than Palpatine.
Older than dirt.
He's older than dirt. And he was born on the outer rim world of Eriadu, found in the Siswana sector, and was the newest member of the Tarkin family, who are an old, wealthy, and powerful clan that were the descendants of colonists that were granted the living on the world of Eriadu.
Of course, he comes from nobility.
Yeah, he does come from nobility, but not to say that he is completely a complete aristocrat, because Eriadu, like with most planets in the Outer Rim, in the middle of buttfuck nowhere. So... his family had to claw from basically nothing because they were surrounded at all sides by the untamed wilderness of Eriadu. Not to mention the frequent pirates and raiders that come and steal their shit and everything.
Oof.
Yeah.
Steal issue.
Yeah. Going with that right off the bat, Hannah. Goddamn. But yeah, okay, so Eriadu isn't exactly a unimportant world in the middle of the Outer Rim. It did have some materials, such as Lomite, which is very important for starship construction and all of that, which is the main reason why pirates go and raid the Tarkins and their estates and all that. But yeah, the Tarkins would remain safe within their family compound, which is, you know, the typical thing where it has high walls and everything to keep out the wildlife with heavily armed guards, because let's be honest, when you're in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, you gotta arm yourself with high-class weapons and all that shit.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, the Targans wished to make their mark within the chaotic Siswana sector, and they outright refused to comply with Core World Arbitrary deals, meaning that the judicial forces from the Republic were kept from protecting the Siswana sector from pirates. Like, they outright refused, because they want to remain independent. Like, they want to carve their own name in the history of the galaxy, that sort of thing. But Viz led the sector to create their own paramilitary force, which is called the Outland Region Security Force, which was so formidable that at times it is unofficially called the Republic Navy. That's how formidable it is.
Damn.
Yeah. And Tarkin, while he did live in luxury with a lot of faithful servants, he also got the proper education in many fields such as politics, science, the arts, and the military. So he's a very cultural man from the get-go.
Sounds like Thrawn would approve of this man.
Yeah, exactly. He was taught obedience and discipline over everything else. Like, he was born in nobility, but he was outright taught not to take things for granted. Like, for example, he would have dinner one day, and his father would order one of the servants to take his food away. As a little example of that's how easily something could be taken from you.
I would have been like, the fuck, I'm eating that.
He's all like, you know, he's like doing his thanks and all that. He goes to eat, and then the servant just takes it right from under him.
The fuck? That's food.
But yeah, Tarkin was basically trained from a young age to be to adapt in more ways than one. Because like there's this when I was listening to Meta Nerds and his backstory on Tarkin. Mm-hmm. Like at first, Tarkin was a very kind kid. Like, he had a near human servant, and his father was lecturing him about not treating them like they're equals. Like,
filthy Xenos.
Like, we are their betters in a chaotic universe. And he was asking Tarkin, would you present your food to this servant? And Tarkin's like, yeah, because she's a member of the family. And his father was just disgusted by that.
Oof.
And he would just nail that into the young Wilhelm Tarkin. Like, you are a Tarkin, act like it, sort of mentality.
Damn.
But that's not all that his parents did with Tarkin to nail that sort of survivor mentality into them. One fateful night, Wilhelm's great uncle, a man by the name of Jova Tarkin, came in along with several other relatives and guide and took the, at the time, 16-year-old Wilhelm as his parents watched on with no hint of emotion or comfort as they just took him away and went out into the wilderness of Eriadu to survive, basically, in the harsh wilderness.
Impromptu camper trip, boy, get your shit and go.
This was a family tradition that all members of the Tarkins have to undertake, and he would be taken to what is called the Carrion Plateau to learn the ways of survival. One of these many tests would be Tarkin, as a 16-year-old boy, would survive a pack of Eriadu wildcats with nothing but his wits and a simple spear. There's actually a comic of a young Tarkin just going out into the long grasses. I know there's a Jurassic Park joke in there somewhere. He would just go out into the long grasses and just survive these wildcats.
Ooh, the cats look cool.
They do look cool, yeah. But, yeah, not exactly something you want to get up close to, let alone two in the middle of a wilderness. But, yeah, Tarkin...
Armed with only a spear.
Armed with only a spear and just the clothes that you had on your back. Tarkin, he's kind of hardcore, let's just say.
any other person would be quite fucked.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And Tarkin, he would pass these trials with flying colors. And he would later go on to apply these skills to control the pirates and the lawbreakers of the Outer Rim within the Outland Region Security Force.
Nice.
There's this entire canon story called Tarkin, which goes into his backstory and his year early years in the Empire. It's from what I heard is a really good book. I believe the author of Darth Plagueis wrote that book as well.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, you know it's quality. Tarkin, he would join the Outland Security Force, where he became a lieutenant by the age of 19, by the way. Which is pretty, pretty good accomplishment for someone of his age. One day, he made a name for himself by outwitting and brutally suppressing a group of pirates called Quanah's Marauders, which were once led by this noble from a noble house by the name of House Elegan. This noble basically led a double life, where he was a noble by day, but by night, he was a ruthless pirate who led these marauders and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he had this lover who was the daughter of his personal escort and all that. He would one day die, and his lover was so distraught by his death that she decided to lead the pirates in his name. And she took up the name of Quanah. And, you know, she applied her name to Quanah's Marauders.
Hmm.
She basically became a folk hero and the pirate queen of the Outer Rim. Quanah is a very cunning woman. And there are many rumors and stories surrounding her, such as surviving starship collisions, starfighter crashes, blaster bolt and vibroblade wounds, fistfights, and personal duels. On one occasion, she became stranded on a moon while waiting a rescue, and she was forced to chew off her own infected hand.
Oh.
Yeah, she's kind of hardcore. Due to this, she had multiple artificial arms, one artificial leg from the knee down, and an ocular implantment.
Damn.
So yeah, she's had a lot of self-mutilation. She was a proper pirate queen, just to give you an idea of how hardcore she is. This pirate queen, Quanah, had been captured on two separate occasions. But due to her connections to House Elegan, she was only given lengthy sentences instead of death sentences, which is a normal thing
for
a pirate queen.
That's just a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, exactly. But every single time, her pirates would break her out of prison because they were that loyal to her. Just to give you an idea of what kind of woman a young Tarkin was up against.
Mm-hmm.
She was so infamous that the Republic placed a bounty on her head, thus forcing her to move her operations to the Suswana sector, where the judicials didn't have jurisdiction. Like, oh, they're in Tarkin territory. Sorry, we can't do anything about that. That's all on you. And, eventually Tarkin, the Lieutenant Tarkin would actually ambush and capture Quanah from a very clever ambush, which is basically like, oh, they are attacking randomly. And then Tarkin's like, no, she's not attacking by random. There's actually a pattern to this. And he got the pattern down and managed to capture her ass, which is pretty impressive since he's 19 years old, by the way. But this is where he truly gained his reputation. Like, he was talking to Quanah in person. And despite being shackled and brought before the young man on her knees, she continued to mock and belittle him. Here's a nice little insert from the Tarkin novel. There isn't a prison that could contain me, boy, even on Eriadu. You're confusing Eriadu with worlds that have noble houses and trials by jury. And
we don't got that here, bitch.
So let me ask you a simple question, Hannah. What do you do with a pirate queen of this significant reputation who's broken out of prison multiple times?
Kill her.
How?
Maybe trial by combat?
So, like, Tarkin, he was thinking, like, basically, imprisoning her is out of a question because of her connections to the noble house and all that. Killing her on the spot would work, but considering that she's a folk hero, she would basically die as a martyr, and it will do nothing to quell the pirate raids that have been going on in the Swanna sector. So he came up with a very, let's just say, metal idea of dealing with this pirate problem.
What'd he do?
So basically, he rounded up Quanah and her pirates and put them in this cargo container, sent them off into the vacuum of space, pre-programmed it to slowly drift to a nearby star.
My God.
And this thing was moving so slowly, it wasn't even meant to be a quick death. It was just impending doom. And the pirates that Tarkin did not capture came out of hyperspace and tried to rescue their leader. But they would all get gunned down by the Outland Security Force. Mm-hmm. And Tarkin, he would activate a live feed of the inside of a cargo container to view Quanah for both his security forces and all the other pirates that were in the Siswana sector. And as the cargo container slowly drifted closer and closer to the sun, the live feed showed Quanah being roasted alive. Oof. As she really quickly became this defiant pirate queen to an incoherent mess as she is pleading desperately to be set free, and she is slowly cooked alive. Oof. And after that, a lot of the pirates that once followed Quanah just went into hiding. Like, the Siswana sector was quiet for a good while after the example Tarkin made for everybody out there. But yeah, Tarkin, he is a man that believes in ruling by fear, because that's exactly how he was trained in the wilds of Iriadu. Like, you gotta show these untamed beasts that with fear, you could spread order across the galaxy and all that stuff. After he served in the Outland Security Force, Tarkin joined an academy to eventually join... Well, he was in the academy to eventually join the Judicial Department of the Republic. And there he met a very lovely senator from Naboo.
He met, Bail or Padme?
Palpatine.
Oh.
Yeah, he has met Palpatine for the very first time. And he would have a very good impression of the young Senator Palpatine. Like, Palpatine, he was going around finding allies, and he heard of this ruthless young cadet from Iriadu. And, you know, he liked the cut of his jib. And he's like, "Hey, Tarkin, I've heard of your reputation, and I've heard of what you did to those pirates out there in Iriadu, in the Siswana sector." Palpatine would basically approach him and be like, "Hey, Tarkin, I know you are trying your best to get into the Judicial Academy, but I have a way in that I could get you. You don't have to stay in this academy for very long. But if you take this deal, I am asking you to consider a career in politics." And at first, Tarkin, he kind of ignored the advice, but he did accept Palpatine's offer into going immediately into the Judicial Academy. And it was said that when he made his introduction to the Judicial Academy, he came in with full Outland regalia, you know, like the classic shoulder pads and all that sort of thing, just to show the other cadets there that he was meant to be here and not this pretender from the Outer Rim. But, of course, a lot of the cadets are from the core world, and they basically laughed at the young Tarkin. Like, "Look at this goddamn tryhard over here. He thinks he's a motherfucking noble." Oh, it's like that classic It's like in high school where all of your peers are like, oh no, we got a badass over here, that sort of thing. And they basically mockingly salute him and called him Commander because he looks so uptight. And at times, Tarkin, he would go into brawls with his classmates because, you know, classic bullying stuff. However, during a certain mission, he and a couple of his cadets were sent to the world of Halcyon, where he would actually prove himself by helping the cadets navigate the middle of buttfuck nowhere woods, because he came from Iriadu, who was pretty good at survival and all that. Okay. And he managed to do this well enough that the Jedi were impressed. Like, they went on a mission, the Jedi practically accomplished their mission, and they looked at this group, and they're like, how the fuck are you guys still alive? And it was Tarkin that helped them out. And after that...
That's funny. You don't have the Force. Why the fuck are you still alive?
Exactly. And after that, many of the judicial department would respect Tarkin a lot more. And Tarkin, he would get more acclaim by going to several other missions throughout the galaxy and the judicial department and all that. And eventually, he decided to follow Palpatine's advice, and he would pursue a career in the political arena, where he eventually became the governor of Iriadu, which is a pretty goddamn good accomplishment to have.
Yeah.
But aside from Palpatine, Tarkin would make friends with several other influential figures. One of them is Raef Sienaar, who is the heir to the Republic Sienaar Systems, which is the company that would eventually create some of the most famous vehicles of the Empire, such as the TIE Fighter.
Okay.
And he would also have connections with a young Orson Krennic, which is probably a name you might recognize from canon.
It doesn't sound familiar.
Orson Krennic is the creator of the Death Star.
The way you said that, it sounded like one word. But I have not watched Rogue One, but I know kind of who you're talking about.
Okay. But yeah, he was making a lot of connections. He was, at around this time, Palpatine hadn't taken the position of the Supreme Chancellor yet. He was still the humble senator of Naboo, but Tarkin, he would real quickly become one of Palpatine's closest allies. Like, they were close friends, very, very close friends. So much so that there was this one incident called the Iriadu Summit, which was a negotiations between the current Senator Valorum and the administration of a trade federation. And something happened, the Trade Federation doctorate was assassinated, and Tarkin, he was hosting this entire event, but he would prevent Senator Valorum and his legislation from investigating the matter, basically weakening his leadership more and more. Come the Separatist crisis, more political tension has begun to boil in the Outer Rim. And just to give you an idea, Iriadu is part of the Outer Rim, and a good majority of Outer Rim worlds are becoming aligned with this new Separatist alliance in the making. Mm-hmm. And a lot of Republic senators were questioning if Wilhelm Tarkin and the Iriadu, or more specifically the Siswana sector, would remain loyal to the Republic because, well, they're basically surrounded at all sides by enemies. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of suicide to stay with the Republic. But Tarkin, he would stay loyal to Palpatine. But a couple of months before the start of the Clone Wars, he would be approached by a certain count from Serenal. Like, Dooku, he was heading negotiations, like, talking to Tarkin, like, if you join my Separatist alliance, you could benefit a lot from trade, because Iriadu is part of the Hydean Way, which is an important trade route from the Outer Rim worlds to the Core worlds. And if Dooku got Iriadu, that would mean that the Separatists have a way into the Core worlds. And he was talking to Targan, like, if you joined the Separatist Alliance, it would be much more beneficial for your planet's economy and all of that. Plus, you wouldn't be surrounded at all sides by enemies if you decided to stay with the Republic. And despite the logical choice being to side with the Confederacy, Targan remained loyal to Palpatine through and through.
Wow.
Like Dooku, like the last meeting that he had with Count Dooku, like Dooku was dropping numerous hints. Like, if you join me, I will be able to shield you from the coming war. War between the Republic and the Separatists is inevitable. And Tarkin was like, how can you be so sure? The Republic doesn't exactly have a sustainable military force. We have a judicial department, and that's basically it. And Dooku was all like, don't be surprised if the Republic has proxies to help out in fighting in their war to come.
That's funny.
And Tarkin and the Dooku was basically going along the lines of,
he didn't outright say they had clones, he's just...
It was just proxies.
Skirting around the facts.
Yeah, pretty much. And Dooku was all like, it is time for a new change. The Republic has ruled the galaxy long enough. It requires someone else to rule it with an iron fist. And Tarkin was all like, someone like you, perhaps? And Dooku was like, oh, I'm ambitious, like, but I'm not that ambitious.
Like, I could, but nah.
Yeah, Dooku was all like, I'm ambitious, but I'm not that ambitious.
Bullshit. I'm calling absolute BS.
Not wrong, Hannah. But, you know, just Dooku was dropping all these hints. And Tarkin, he was kind of confused why Dooku was giving all these hints. Like, why was he so sure that that this war was going to happen? So on and so forth. And when Tarkin outright still refused...
it's not like anyone was doing anything behind everybody's fucking backs.
I know. And when Tarkin refused to join the Separatist Alliance, Dooku was like, okay, I give you my word that when the war happens, Iriadu will not be harmed. After all, we're both on the same side.
Huh.
And Tarkin was a little...
what the fuck?
Yeah, Tarkin was a little bit confused by that statement. But he kind of had his suspicions, but in reality... this entire negotiations that was happening between Dooku and Tarkin was a test by Palpatine. To basically test out Tarkin's loyalty to him.
Well, he's very, very loyal.
Yeah, he passed his test with flying colors. And with
he's a good dog.
Yeah, and Palpatine's like, okay, this guy, he is definitely going to make a great asset in the Empire to come, so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. And come the beginning of the Clone Wars, Iriadu would become a major Republic stronghold, and Wilhelm Tarkin decided to drop his position of governor and became a captain of the Republic Navy. And he would participate in many battles, which he most of the time won, such as the Battle of Okay, let me rephrase that. Such as the defense of Kamino, when it was invaded several times by the Separatists.
Okay.
And while Tarkin served alongside the clone troopers, he began to look down upon them. And mostly in particular, he was growing concerned with the level of individuality that they were exhibiting under the guidance of a Jedi. Because Tarkin... He is very rigid with a command structure and all of that. Like, if these clones disregard orders from their superior, what else are they capable of doing? So on and so forth.
We all know what they're capable of doing.
But more often, Tarkin had grown very weary of the Jedi serving as military commanders, as he saw giving that very crucial role to basically a bunch of peacekeepers as an unwise decision. Because let's be honest, that is kind of an unwise decision.
It is an unwise decision.
Because number one, giving military roles to basically glorify police officers isn't exactly the best strategy. But number two, their adherence to their code, which is all about morality, basically holds back the full extent of a grand army of a Republican, what they could accomplish and all that. I mean, even though Anakin and Obi-Wan are committing war crimes here and there, they're not exactly going around and ruthlessly taking over worlds and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, eventually Tarkin, he would become a captain under the command of Jedi Master Evan Peel, who is the pointed eared guy.
Okay.
They went on this one mission to secure the Nexus route, which is a strategically important hyperspace route that gives access to the homeworlds of both the Separatists and the Republic. So it's very important that neither side gets this. But both Tarkin and even Peel got captured by the Separatists, and they were sent straight off to this maximum security facility called the Citadel.
Okay.
And this facility, just to give you a perspective, it was originally created to contain rogue Jedi. So it is virtually impregnable.
I think Liel had to spend some time in there during Child of Aigo.
Yeah.
Because somehow, some way, she got captured and... Yeah.
Probably not the same Citadel that you're thinking about, but yeah, I can see that.
I just remember the Citadel.
Yeah, I gotcha.
I'm sorry that I'm so tired. I did not sleep great, and your girl, her brother woke her up early.
Yeah, that's fair. Before they got captured, they basically deleted the exact coordinates of the Nexus trade route, so the Separatists won't gain them. And both Tarkin and Evan Peel memorize two different halves of the Nexus trade route. That way, if either of one of them dies, then the Separatists won't get it. It's a win-win. And they were put in the Citadel, and they were eventually broken out by a rescue team composing of Obi-Wan, Anakin, Ahsoka, and a couple of other clone troopers and all that.
Okay.
Yeah, and this is essentially the first time Tarkin interacted with Anakin Skywalker himself. Like, he heard about the Chosen One, his time as a Padawan in the Jedi Temple, and now as the hero of a Republic and all that. But this is the first time they properly interacted with each other. And this is an entire arc in the Clone Wars. It's really good if you guys are interested in watching it. It's called the Citadel arc. But from his entire endeavor, Tarkin is kind of putting his input. It's a massively small group because a lot of the clones that were part of his mission were killed.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan was like, okay, we need to split up the party so that they don't capture us all at once. And Tarkin's like,
That's not a good idea.
Yeah, D&D wise, that's usually not a good idea.
That is not a good idea.
And Tarkin's like, no, we need to stay together and overwhelm anybody that opposes us in sheer numbers. Our odds of survivability would be greater. Which is, considering that Tarkin has survived missions of his magnitude, it's probably a wise idea to listen to him, but all the Jedi basically ignored him and decided to split him. And Tarkin's like, fine, whatever.
Okay.
And he was paired up with Anakin Skywalker and Ahsoka Tano, and they were going along these underground tunnels and all that. And Tarkin was kind of voicing his disapproval of his mission and all of that. And he was talking to Skywalker, and Anakin's like, you don't trust the Jedi, do you? And Tarkin's like, I just don't trust in their methods. They could do so much more if they weren't held back by their code. And Anakin's like, you know what? I actually agree with you on that. I don't agree with all of the tenets of the Jedi Order. They hold us back. And Tarkin's like, well, at least not all of you think the same way, at least. And he was very disapproving of Ahsoka Tano. Like, why the hell is this essentially 16-year-old.
Why is this child wearing that?
Why is...
Same thing with Captain Pelion. Put some clothes on, girl!
But no, Captain Tarkin is like, why are we being led by this 16-year-old woman who doesn't know shit about military tactics and all that stuff? And even though Captain Rex spoke in Ahsoka's defense, Tarkin was not convinced in the slightest. And long story short, they managed to successfully get off of the citadel with a fair amount of casualties, and even Peel was killed in the process, and he was forced to give up his half of the Nexus trade route to Ahsoka. And they went back to the Jedi Temple, and Tarkin was like, okay, I do have my half of the Nexus trade route, but I will only impart it with Palpatine. And Ahsoka's like, well, I have my half of the Nexus trade route, and I can only impart it with the Jedi High Council. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it's kind of up in the air if they actually got the full trade route, but the point is that it's kind of a very complex situation going on here. And Tarkin, he was like, it was, he goes to Anakin and he's like, I am so happy to know that there are Jedi that actually think like a military man, that sort of thing. And he gained a new respect for Skywalker after that. So you kind of slowly see the relationship growing between Palpatine and the eventual Darth Vader and all that. However, in time, however, this would come to a head as the Jedi grew, as the Jedi's influence as military commanders kind of grew more and more. And Tarkin, he was kind of getting tired of his bullshittery that's going on. And he composed this letter that was sent directly to Palpatine to voice his concerns about the matter. Dire circumstances demand that I must be blunt. I fear the Jedi Order will lose this war if they are allowed to continue in their role as the leadership of a Grand Army of the Republic. These recent weeks have piled debacle upon us, and I cannot sit in silence and still call myself a patriot. I have expressed concerns of this type to you in the past, and you've been generous enough to offer an attentive ear. I know your time is valuable, so this is not a repetition of earlier misgivings.
Damn.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is a warning. This is a demand.
Basically. And even though Tarkin is growing this huge respect between him and Anakin Skywalker, this would come to a head during the bombing of the Jedi Temple.
Oof.
Yeah. Because during this matter, Tarkin was basically the representative of a Republic military at this time, and the current person that they have imprisoned is a Republic citizen for all intents and purposes. Normally, this would be done by the Jedi Order because, you know, bombing their temple and all of that. However, during the bombing, a bunch of clone troopers and a bunch of military equipment got blown up. So this ultimately is a military matter as well. So they kind of had to take the prisoner away from the Jedi Order.
Oh, yeah. Isn't he the one who said clones are property?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you can see how low of opinion Tarkin has with clones in general. Mm-hmm. And when Ahsoka basically killed the prisoner, Tarkin was like, okay, it's very obvious that you were the one who blew up the Jedi Temple. And it didn't help that...
It's all because of that shit weasel that Ahsoka left the Jedi.
Yeah, you could partially thank Tarkin for Ahsoka leaving the Jedi Order and all that.
Screw you, you old asshole.
I think he was in his 40s at around this time.
Screw you.
But, it didn't exactly help that Ahsoka was working alongside former Confederate leader Asajj Ventress to uncover the truth and all that.
Yeah.
And Tarkin, he was assigned as the prosecutor against Ahsoka. And this entire event basically shattered any growing relationship that he had with Anakin. Because number one, when Ahsoka was in prison, he forbid anybody from visiting her, including Anakin.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. And number two, when Tarkin was being the prosecutor and trying to convince the jury that Ahsoka was guilty, he legit asked for the death penalty upon her.
Yo.
because he's all like, we need to make an example of Jedi that betrayed the Republic. Because he basically saw Ahsoka as a political scapegoat, yeah, sort of thing.
Yeah, scapegoat. And poor Ahsoka. She didn't deserve that. She did deserve that.
No, she did not. But fortunately, at the last minute, Anakin came in. God bless him. With Barriss Offe and dropping the charges against Ahsoka. But even though Ahsoka did not get the death penalty, it was pretty much too late at that point. Not only shattering Ahsoka's faith in the Republic and the Jedi Order, but also the friendship that Tarkin had with Anakin. Oof. And secretly Palpatine absolutely, like, later in the Imperial era, Palpatine outright hated the trial against Ahsoka Tano because, number one, it completely shattered any sort of relationship he was hoping Tarkin would have with Anakin, both of his closest friends and all that stuff. But yeah, it was just something that was outside of his control in general. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after that, Tarkin, he would stay on Coruscant because Palpatine, he saw value in Tarkin if he kept him close at hand and all that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Tarkin was one of the very few people that legit had Palpatine's ear. Like, Tarkin, he was one of the few people that would actually stand up to Palpatine and disagree with him on certain things.
Didn't Tarkin stand up to Thrawn, too?
Oh, yes, he did.
Yeah. Like, I don't care who you are or what your position is. This is what I say and what I say goes.
Yeah. And
he gave no fucks.
Yeah, he gave absolutely no fucks. But he isn't a dumb man. He isn't that ambitious.
He's a smart man.
He is a very, very smart man and very politically minded, even though he's mostly a military man.
Politics, unfortunately, comes along with serving in the military.
Unfortunately, that is very true. Like, there is multiple moments. Palpatine, he would shield Tarkin multiple times from Vader's wrath. Like, in the early days of the Empire, when Darth Vader was still a recent figure and a lot of Imperials kind of doubted his position, someone, we don't know who, attempted to assassinate Darth Vader. And Darth Vader...
Good fucking luck trying.
Obviously, it didn't work.
That's a dead man walking.
Exactly. And they don't know who plays the bounty on his head or the assassination attempt. And Vader, he was like, I want to set an example to show that nobody is off limits for my wrath. And Palpatine was like, okay, kill anybody you want, except Tarkin, I need him.
That's funny. It's just funny. You can kill anybody you want. Not Tarkin.
Not Tarkin. I need him.
Vader's just like, damn it.
And another time, motherfucking Vader went to Scarif, which is the planet where the Empire keeps all of their top secret shit and all that. And Tarkin, he found
aside it. Aside from Mount Tantus?
I know, man. Mount Tantus is its whole other thing, but Scarif is the canon example. But anyway, Vader, he went there personally, and Tarkin found out about this. He's like, Vader, what the fuck are you doing? He's like, get out of my room, Vader. And Vader's like, why? I just want to know what's going on here. And he basically says, I'm telling on you.
I'm telling Grandpa. I'm telling Papa Palpy.
I'm telling Papa Palpy. Yeah, going back again with Palpatine being the sugar daddy of the Star Wars universe. But yeah, that's just to give you an idea of how motherfucking important Tarkin is to Palpatine.
Yeah.
But yeah, he would stay on Coruscant for basically the remainder of the war. And when the Republic transformed into the Galactic Empire, Tarkin fully supported the change. Like, okay.
No fucking shit.
He's like, okay, this is it now. This is exactly how I wanted the Republic to become. Mwah! That sort of thing.
Well, duh. That's what he wanted all along.
Yeah. And he would be made Moff of the Greater Siswana Sector. And in the early years of the Empire, he would take charge over several projects, such as Project War Mantle, which saw the clones being replaced with regular human conscripts and become the first stormtroopers and all that.
Yep, so that's how the stormtroopers came to be.
Yeah, Tarkin played an important part in The Bad Batch, season one. Because even though the clone troopers were very effective soldiers, let's be honest, that is expensive. To have a bunch of human clones and all
that.
Oh,
yeah. If they keep dying, you need more to replace your troops.
Exactly.
And the Kaminoans charge up the ass.
Yeah, it's not exactly going to be easy when he's like, come on, keep growing. Come on. We have a war to win in like a couple months. Come on.
Yeah.
When it's much easier to just pull in conscripts from your patriotic populace and all that.
To be fair, in Legends, Thrawn tried that and was kind of successful.
Yeah. Yeah, very
kinda.
True. Kind of.
But you can't replicate you can't put the Force into a clone. Otherwise, no. They go fucking nuts.
Exactly. Just ask Zaboth.
Sabaoth.
Sabaoth. Yeah, that crazy motherfucker. But yeah, he was also one of the supporting minds behind the Death Star, which he was impressed by with its gargantuan size and firepower, but he found the name itself to be overly melodramatic. So even he kind of rolls his eyes at the name Death Star.
He's like, I just picture him looking at the place like, really? The Death Star?
He's like, this is very impressive. What's it called? The Death Star. He's like, really? Ugh, really? So at least that's one thing he could share with Kit.
He's the unamused British man.
Yeah, pretty much. That's Peter Cushing in general, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
But in around these years, Tarkin, he would lead several campaigns into the Outer Rim to retake worlds formerly held by the Separatists to strengthen the influence of the Empire and all that. He was known for several massacres, including one called the Antar Atrocity, which committed mass deaths, not just with those that were formerly aligned with the Separatists, but Imperial loyalists as well.
Oh, no.
He was just indiscriminate with his massacre.
Oh, no.
Just to give you a good idea of how ruthless Tarkin is.
So he just didn't care.
He didn't care at all.
What's that Russian fighter's name in Rocky?
Oh, God. I know exactly who you're talking about. Goddamn, it's been a while since I watched any of the Rocky movies, but I know exactly who you're talking about.
Just that quote, if he dies, he dies.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Tarkin was a very controversial figure, but ultimately, he proved to be an efficient military commander, and Palpatine continued to see his worth in many occasions. And at one point, even though Vader kind of grew discontent with Palpatine. Well, he was always discontent with Palpatine, but that's a whole other story. He still harbored this huge resentment for Tarkin for Ahsoka's trial and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was Anakin. This is Vader, so he's kind of just shaking that off of him. And Palpatine, he would encourage Vader to talk with Tarkin. And Tarkin would indulge his backstory like, oh yeah, in my childhood, I would go on this huge test to survive out in the wilderness of Eriadu. Like, I had to kill a bunch of cats and all that. And Vader grew to respect Tarkin because he didn't know about his harsh childhood and all that. So he kind of saw him a little bit of himself in Tarkin. Granted, he was born from nobility and not as a slave, but still.
There is a clear difference between Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Everyone knows that.
Yeah, very, very true.
I mean, it's even mentioned in the radio drama.
That is very true, but yeah, there was this one point where Vader goes up to Tarkin and he's like, hey, you want to have some fun? And Tarkin's like, the fuck? What do you mean?
Like, what?
And basically,
it's just silent concern.
Basically.
I am concerned.
There's this, there's this entire comic where Tarkin, he is given this hunting for sport sort of game with Vader. They would go out into the wilderness of Eriadu, and Tarkin was tasked with hunting Darth Vader in the wilderness. And Tarkin, he would not be alone in this, obviously. Like, he have a couple of guides, he have a couple of Chatrafan trackers, because, you know, they could detect sounds from, like, a mile away. And in this comic, Darth Vader, he looks so motherfucking badass. Like, he's going out in the wilderness killing wildcats, and he has, like, a fur cape from one of the cats that he killed. It is so awesome, but also funny.
Vader being hunted by Tarkin is a complete turnaround of the most dangerous game.
Yeah, exactly. The most dangerous game, which is very appropriate for Tarkin.
I love that short story.
Oh, yeah.
It's so good.
But anyway, so long story short, Vader manages to corner Tarkin near this cliff, and there's this ferocious thunderstorm that's going on. And Tarkin, he obviously can't defeat Vader in a straight-up fight. So
Vader's got the fucking Force.
Yeah, exactly. So he has to think about this carefully. So he basically goes to the edge of his cliff, and Vader, he's going up to Tarkin with his lightsaber. Like, he killed all of his guards and all that.
Sidestep. Woo!
That's not quite what happens.
Just fucking out of The Simpsons.
Something that even, arguably even more comedic happens.
What happened? Did he trip him?
No. He got struck by lightning.
What?
Because Tarkin, he was leading Vader up towards the highest point because, you know, a thunderstorm was happening. And he's like, gotcha, bitch. And he got struck by lightning. And Vader just falls to the ground, just, ah.
How the fuck was he able to time that?
Because it's motherfucking Tarkin. He's a survivalist, man.
Oh my god.
It's so motherfucking awesome. I know it's a little bit silly. I'll send
it
you
is
pictures.
Silly.
It is a little bit silly, but it's still kind of funny. And it grew this mutual respect between Tarkin and Vader. Because both of them are just laying on the ground. And Tarkin's just, hey, we need a shuttle for pickup for two.
Damn. And he's just laying there smoking this.
He's like, I need a pickup for two, and Vader's like, ah!
He's internally screaming, like, ouch!
But yeah, after that, Tarkin and Groove is, well, both Vader and Tarkin, Groove is a little bit of respect for each other, because Vader saw Tarkin's worth, because he's not your sniveling coward of an Imperial. He's actually got balls of steel, and he managed to corner Vader like that. Which is a very smart way to go about it.
Yeah, and it's like, hey, you defeated me without even using the Force. You outsmarted me.
Yeah, that deserves respect right
there.
Yes,
it does.
But yeah, aside from that, one of Tarkin's most famous contributions, well, okay, Tarkin, he would advise the heavy innovation to numerous weapons of warfare, such as numerous super weapons, the Death Star being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he would be promoted to Grand Moff, basically making him the ruler of the entirety of the Outer Rim. He was that powerful. And he would put forward this one proposal. Okay. So he would put forward this proposal, which would dictate the Imperial doctrine for the rest of its history, basically.
Okay.
And this document would officially be called the Imperial Communique number 001044.92V, or more famously, the Tarkin Doctrine.
I was going to say, I've heard of the Tarkin Doctrine before.
Yeah, it's basically the idea of ruling by fear. And, like, it makes sense. Like, if you have a military...
That's literally what Jadis wanted to do.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense when you think about it. Like, what better way to keep your population in line, but with overwhelming force? Like, you have a shit ton of stormtroopers, TIE fighters, and these massive Star Destroyers that basically can wreak havoc on an entire system by themselves alone. So it makes sense, But there's always that idea that ruling by fear isn't exactly the wisest way to rule. I mean, it works in the short term, but not in the long term.
It does not work in the long term because the public will eventually rise up against you.
Yeah, exactly. It's the idea like, sure, they may fear you and they won't think of rebelling against you so long.
They won't be afraid forever.
Yeah, they won't be afraid forever. So long as you emanate this aura of invincibility, they will stay fearful. The moment you show any sign of weakness, yeah, they're going to overthrow you.
Well, even then, people get tired of being stepped on.
That is very true. You can only apply ruling by fear for so long. But Tarkin, basically the Tarkin Doctrine was the go-to doctrine that the Empire went with. That was how influential Tarkin is to the Empire.
Yeah.
So there are multiple other projects. Like, in canon, he was opposed to Krennic's Death Star, but he was all for Grand Admiral Thrawn's TIE Defender project. Like, it makes sense. You need a superior starfighter that could go into hyperspace and all that. Mm-hmm. Like, Thrawn, as much as Tarkin...
Because starfighters can't go into hyperspace.
Yeah, TIE fighters cannot.
TIE fighters.
Yeah, we'll talk about TIE fighters in their own episode, but they're kind of the worst vehicles in Star Wars total. That's not even an exaggeration.
Wow.
They were purposely made to make sure that a pilot stay compliant to the Empire.
Oh, shit.
But anyway, Tarkin, he was all about Thrawn's TIE Defender program. As much as Tarkin doesn't like aliens, he saw the Worf in Thrawn.
Well, duh. Fucking Palpatine did, too.
Yeah, that is very true.
It's obvious that Tarkin would.
Yeah. And at first, he was opposed to Krennic's Death Star project. Like, it basically took the Death Star a total of 20 years to be constructed, with little to show for it at that point. And Tarkin's like, I don't know about this Death Star project. How are we gonna know it's gonna blow up a world if you don't have anything to show for it? But it was basically him saving face. And any failures that Krennic took from the Death Star project, Tarkin would push onto him.
It would be all on him. It's like, I'm not supervising this.
Like, the moment, this is all showcased in Rogue One, in case you're wondering.
I kind of got that.
On the first actual test of a Death Star super laser, Tarkin was all for it. And he's like, I'm taking command of this super station now. And Krennic was just pissed the fuck off.
He's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, Tarkin, he has a little bit of a plagiarism streak going on here. Because in Legends, his old buddy, Rafe Sienaar, basically had the blueprints, well, the beginning blueprints, which would eventually build up to the Death Star. But Tarkin saw that, and he's like, yoink, and gave it to Palpatine. And he's like, this is what I came up with, Papa Palpy.
Like, okay, don't completely copy my work. Yeah. Does it anyway.
Motherfucking, hey Disney, I'll let you do my homework, and make sure to copy it, but make it less obvious. That's okay, I copy from you anyway. Wait, what? What? Motherfucking Lion King with Kimba.
Kimba the White Lion, that's a throwback.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, Tarkin, he has a lot of political foresight going on here. He even, at one point, has a wife named Thessala Tarkin. But he only married her for political gains, because she was part of a prestigious family.
Cool. Loveless marriage.
Yay, loveless marriage, even though she loved the fuck out of him.
What the fuck?
Yeah, yeah.
Who would want to love him?
At one point, he gained a valuable slave when he conquered Mon Cala. You want to know who that slave is?
Who?
Gale Agbar.
What?
Yep, he was the master of Gale Agbar at one point.
Oh no! I didn't know Agbar was a slave.
Oh yes, he was. The Empire conquered his homeworld and a good amount of his people became slaves.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. And of course, Tarkin, he would train multiple protégés. There were a couple named Galen Dermal, Alien Zira, but his most famous one is Natasi Dalla.
Yes, everyone knows about Natasi Dalla, yeah. Not Natasha.
Yeah, I said Natasi. That's that's just a quirk for me whenever I see a similar sounding name.
Natasi.
Yeah, Natasi, not Natashi.
Not Natasha.
But you gotta see the similarities there. Yeah, I get it. But funny enough, we'll eventually cover this in Natasi's episode. But she was one of the few women that Tarkin legitimately found attractive. Not for her looks, just for her pure ruthlessness.
Fair enough, but still, he's old enough to be your fucking father.
But yeah, though his most infamous and controversial action that would change the tone of the Galactic Civil War and the galaxy forever would be the destruction of Alderaan.
Yes.
Yeah, the very obvious one. And he kind of reasoned that the destruction of such a world would be best to demonstrate the power of the Death Star to the wider galaxy. Like, this is what happens when you oppose the Empire. The Death Star will fuck around with you.
Yep.
But,
the epitome of fuck around and find out.
Yeah, pretty much. I can see where Tarkin is coming from with the destruction of Alderaan, but he did not know about the long ramifications that would cause. But we'll get to that in a little bit. There's actually this nice little canon comic that I actually do appreciate, where Tarkin, before and after the destruction of Alderaan, like, he's talking to all the junior gunners of the Death Star. Like, he's basically lecturing them, like, you need to do your duty. You cadet. Have you been through any, do you have any scars on you? And he's all like, no, not really. Wait, I do have one scar from when I played basketball or whatever. And Tarkin, in his mind, he was utterly disgusted with this. And he had daydreams of beating the living shit out of these younger cadets because he saw them as inferiors.
What the fuck?
Like, in his daydreams, he would go shirtless, and he has these massive scars across his chest. And he would beat the other living shit out of his cadet. But it goes back to him.
That's fucked up.
But no, it kind of shows his disgust. Like, I'm surrounded by idiots. All of these people that come from noble families, they are nothing of worth. They're only here because of their families, not because they're actually worth a damn, that sort of thing.
And Tarkin's kind of worth a damn, but he's still a noble too.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's a noble, but he legit had to claw his way to get that position.
Yes.
So he kind of has a little bit of a leeway in his perspective, at least.
That much.
But yeah, he kind of grew disgusted. And he would tell these juniors, you need to do your service in the name of the Empire, blah, blah, that sort of thing. And then after the destruction of the Death Star, we're not quite at that point yet. After the destruction of Alderaan, he would round up all the gunners because he ordered, like, position chip or whatever to go into their helmets. He gathered together all the gunners that had a moment of hesitancy of blowing up Alderaan.
Wasn't there a comic focused on one of them?
Yeah, there was like a manga of, oh, I know who you're talking about. The one gunner who who grew very depressed from blowing up Alderaan and the ramifications that inflicted. But we're not talking about that guy just yet. He gathered together all these gunners that had a moment of hesitancy. And he was lecturing them, like, when I order you to blow up a fucking planet, you blow up a planet. And the senior gunner, he noted he was of Alderaan upbringing. And he's all like, oof. You have no excuse of hesitating to blow up your home world. And the senior gunner tried to defend himself by asking, Tarkin, if the Emperor asked you to blow up Iriadu, would you do it? And he's like, abso-fucking-lutely.
What the fuck?
Because I am doing my duty to the Empire.
Oof.
Yeah, he is that ruthless. That's how cold of a motherfucker Tarkin is.
And that's how loyal to the Empire he was.
Yeah, he would even blow up his own fucking planet. He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
And as punishment for these gunners having a moment of hesitancy, he basically jettisoned them out the airlock for the entirety of the Death Star to see.
Just, bye!
Yeah, like, there's this image in the comic where he's just, you know, doing his classic Tarkin pose like this, and in front of him is just the bodies of all the people he is.
Oh, no!
He's like,
that's terrible. That's so dark.
Yeah.
Star Wars can really get dark when you think about it.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely. Tarkin, this is one thing I do appreciate about Tarkin. He does have his points, he's a military man, he's very efficient, he's ruthless. He is undeniably very cruel, though.
Yeah.
Because the entire point of a Tarkin doctrine is to encourage obedience. If you have a moment of disobeying or even thinking about going against your orders, dead.
Well, yeah, that's how you keep people in fear, is through, you know, an iron fist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Tarkin.
Tarkin's fucked up.
He is very fucked up. Now you can see where Natasi got her insanity from.
Yeah. Jesus.
But yeah, after that, we kind of know the rest. He would take the Death Star to Yavin 4, that entire final climax of A New Hope and all that. And here's this interesting thing. Like, he was overly confident that the Death Star would bring the ultimate victory against the Rebel Alliance. Like, he forwent an entire fleet escort. Like, it's just the Death Star. Normally, it would be escorted by, like, Star Destroyers and all that, but Tarkin's like, nah, I don't need that, fam.
The confidence.
He just exuded this overwhelming confidence.
Plot twist, it comes back to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, and even in that movie, one of his Imperial officers were all like, hey, Tarkin, they might know about our weakness. Should I ready your shuttle to evacuate? And Tarkin's like, evacuation on the moment of our victory? I think you overstate their chances. But interestingly enough, Tarkin did have his suspicions that the Rebel Alliance would be able to blow up a Death Star.
He had suspicions.
He kind of had suspicions, but number one, he was very overconfident in his victory against them. Like, Darth Vader, he was basically the best star pilot of the galaxy. Like, he's got that shit covered, essentially. Mm-hmm. But number two, even if it is, well, okay, so it's kind of a lose-lose situation for him. Because even if he did evacuate in time before the Death Star blew up, Palpatine would be pissed.
Yeah, because he ran.
Yeah, he ran away. And even if he did evacuate and the Death Star didn't blow up, he would be basically looked upon as a coward.
Yeah.
So either way, he's fucked.
That's funny.
So either he wins or he dies. And he's willing to die on that hill.
So here's a question. Did Tarkin know about the weak point?
Oh, he did, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah, he knew about the weak point, but he was so overconfident because even though it wasn't exactly dived into the movie that much, even if they did, if the rebels fired their proton torpedoes down that little trench, it probably wouldn't have made it all the way to the core because, you know, the torpedoes won't be able to go into that small hole.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason Luke Skywalker was able to do that was because he used the Force to guide them.
I was gonna say, he was probably guiding it with the Force.
Exactly. So even if they knew about the weakens, their chances of getting that precise shot in was minuscule.
Mm-hmm. The main gist I get about Tarkin is that he's so overconfident.
He is, yeah.
Is that it led to his downfall.
Exactly,
It's like Icarus and flying too close to the sun.
Exactly. That's the ultimate tragedy about Tarkin. He is a smart motherfucker. There's no denying that fact. But he is in such
a
high...
He let his pride get in the way.
Yeah, he let his pride get in the way. Had he come with more than just the Death Star and brought a couple of Star Destroyers, or heck, even unleashed the Death Star's entire complement of TIE Fighters, he would have been fine. But no, no, he just had to boost his ego a little bit there. Yep. But there's this actually, yeah, it's kind of funny, but there's actually this one comic. I think it's supposed to be a Halloween story where it showcases Tarkin's final moments before the Death Star blew up.
Oh.
Like, he was just observing the battle, but the room around him goes dark and he finds himself surrounded by the millions upon millions of people that he's killed by his hands.
Oh, shit.
Let me show you this picture, because it is terrifying. All of these, basically, ghosts of the people that you killed throughout your life.
This sounds right out of a horror movie.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you see Orson Krennic right there.
Load. Oh, my God. Is that a child?
Yep. Yeah, that is a lot of people that he killed.
Oh.
And then Tarkin, he's looking at all the remnants of the people he's killed, and he realizes something is terribly wrong. And
immediately, oh no.
And then for the first time in probably his entire life, he panics, and then boo, goes the Death Star.
Just split second and dead.
Yeah, pretty much. He died in... Didn't exactly die in glory, but yeah, he died on the mountain of corpses that he got himself upon.
Oh, yeah. It's like like that wasted screen from GTA.
Yeah, wasted. Death Star blows up, wasted. But yeah, with the death of Tarkin, things went sideways for the Empire in general.
I would think that shit went sideways. He was their highest commander under Palpatine.
Yeah, Palpatine himself basically said that both Tarkin and Thrawn were the most unparalleled military figures of the Empire. But with them gone, there is a lot of slack that needs to be caught up. And he tasked Darth Vader with that.
That didn't work out.
Well, it didn't work out, but still, not a bad secondary option, in all honesty.
At least Vader can get shit done.
Yeah, he is the supreme commander of the Empire at this point, by the way. But yeah, let's see. Just going through my notes. But yeah, ultimately, Tarkin's bid of using the Death Star as an icon of the Empire's power proved to be his ultimate undoing, as it galvanized many oppressed by the Empire to join the Rebel Alliance in droves.
Nice.
Yeah. Volve is also ensured that the Empire would continue to utilize his doctrine to bring other systems back into line. And even though Palpatine, he basically pushed all the blame of Tarkin's failures onto Vader, because he's the only survivor of the Death Star. Well, okay, not the only survivor, but the highest ranking survivor of the Death Star.
Damn.
He's like, because of Tarkin's failures, I have nobody else to punish except you, motherfucker.
And Vader is just standing there like, what the fuck?
Like, in Legends...
Have you not punished me enough?
In Legends, Palpatine got so angry, he basically chopped off one of Vader's hands and basically demoted him to oversee the construction of a second Death Star for a time.
Was it his other normal hand or was it his robot hand?
His robot hand.
Oh, that's fine. It can get fixed.
But no, like, he was so pissed off at Vader. But the person that he got pissed off the most was the Legends version of the architect of the Death Star. I know it's kind of unrelated, but I'm going to throw this out there because where the fuck else am I going to talk about this? He was so pissed off at the architect, he basically put him in a steel cage and unleashed a bunch of beetles that basically ate him alive.
The mummy treatment.
Yay, the mummy treatment.
Like in the mummy.
But Palpatine kind of saw that he was worth a damn because he created a bunch of other super weapons, so he brought him back to life in a clone body.
Oh my god.
But he was all like...
Because of course he can.
Because he was all like... Okay, motherfucker, you're still important to me, but I swear to God, if you fail me again, I'm going to do the torture treatment to you again. Yeah, Palpatine in Legends is, he's cartoonishly evil.
From what I've seen during Dark Empire, yes.
Yeah, that is very true. But, okay, so in canon, there was another individual who survived the destruction of a Death Star, who was a man by the name of Tej. He was one of the individuals that kind of saw, that went against the Death Star, like, why are we wasting all of our resources on the Death Star? Wouldn't it be more practical to go with a bunch more Star Destroyers and all that stuff?
Yeah, it makes sense from a normal person's perspective, because that's like, not only is that a lot of metal, a lot of electronics, but also a lot of money.
You know, I remember there was like a university out there that pulled the official cost of a Death Star, at least by our standards, at least. Let me see if I could pull it up real quickly for the lulz. Cost.
Yeah, that, just thinking about that. Okay. Oh, God.
$850 quadrillion.
Oh my fucking god!
Which is about 13 times the world's gross domestic product.
Yeah, that's a waste of resources.
Exactly. When you could have just used all that money for a crap ton more Star Destroyers.
Yeah, that's a waste of resources.
By the way, this guy, Tej, he was actually promoted as Grand General. And Vader would serve under him for a good while. Which is very humiliating for a Sith Lord like him.
Yeah.
But anyway, many places within the Empire would take the name of Tarkin to honor the Grand Moff. Like, they would name multiple, like, fortresses and vehicles. Like, the Tarkin's Revenge, or the Tarkin's Port, so on and so forth.
Okay.
As a sort of memorial, to let his name live on in the Empire. Yeah. Even on his homeworld of Iriadu, they would sell merchandise of Tarkin to anybody who visited.
That's dumb. That's so dumb. No, he's not a marketable plushie.
Well, in our day and age, he definitely is.
Fuck no. Who's
going to
buy that?
But anyway, but also, within the ranks of the Empire, even mere lookalikes of Tarkin would increase morale within the Imperial ranks just a small amount. That's how influential Tarkin is. On the other side of a coin, Tarkin's legacy would remain negative, especially among the Alderaanians, who loathed him. And there's even this alien race that took the word Tarkin in their own language, which translates to their version of, what was it? Demon or butcher.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Which is kind of, I'm not gonna lie, that's actually kind of a metal way for your legacy to continue on. Like, your literal name means devil. How badass is that?
Yeah, that is badass.
Yeah. And following the Battle of Endor, there were unconfirmed reports of Tarkin returning in a clone body. So basically, somehow, Tarkin returned.
God.
But fortunately, these reports were dissuaded, as they were rectified of being reports from another Imperial warlord named, and get this, Lord Shadowspawn.
What the fuck?
I know, it's a super edgy name.
I was going to say, that's ultimate edgy cringe.
But one more time in canon. Among the First Order, their rank of major had Tarkin's name inscribed on it to honor him. And there's even a squadron of TIE fighters that was called the Tarkin's Revenge. And that's basically the history of Grand Moff Wilhelm Tarkin.
No, I don't know what I expected. I was going in blind.
That's very fair.
Yeah, I could see why people like him.
Yeah, Tarkin is definitely a interesting villain that isn't a Sith,
yeah.
At the very least.
And he doesn't have the Force.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not a Force user. He's a normal-ass human, which makes him, like, on par with Thrawn.
Yeah, he's
up there with Thrawn.
Yeah, he even gains the respect of Thrawn, who outright calls him a tactical genius.
And that's coming from the tactical genius.
Yeah, the embodiment of, haha, I countered this, but I also plan for your next move, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Tarkin, he is definitely, I definitely love how one of the few things that Disney did right is by expanding more upon Tarkin's backstory. Because initially, he was just, you know, your average...
Average Imperial.
Average Imperial with a little bit of a backstory and a connection to Palpatine. But in Disney canon, it goes into much more of his backstory about his upbringing and how he's a hard-ass, gritty survivalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he also, one of the things I forgot to mention, he has his own personal stealth ship called the Carrion Spike, which is such a cool-ass name for a ship.
Just like Balls with the Night, brother.
Yeah, exactly.
I like that one.
Oh, yeah.
Or the Scimitar.
The Scimitar is also a good one, yeah. But yeah, Wilhelm Tarkin, he is such a fascinating character. And I do agree with Peter Cushing. I wish there was more done with Tarkin in the original trilogy, at least.
Like, oh, yeah.
If he somehow... Well, okay, not somehow. If he survived the destruction of the Death Star somehow, either in like a last ditch attempt or something like that, it would be interesting to see him again.
That'd be an interesting what if.
Yeah. Also, another behind the scenes stuff. They used a separate actor for Tarkin in Rogue One.
Well, duh.
But a lot of the actor's face is computer generated, and they actually had to approach Cushing's estate and get permission on Stanley's
face. Yeah, they had to approach Cushing's estate and say, is it okay if we do this?
Yeah, which I think is pretty cool, and a nice little last performance from the grave, so to speak.
Eh, somewhat.
Somewhat. Still looks pretty good, though.
I still have yet to see Rogue One. So.
I think you might love Rogue One. One of the few Disney movies that is actually good. That's saying something.
Well, as long as it's not sequel quality, we'll be fine.
That is fair, Hannah. That is completely fair. But yeah, that is our episode of Can Mayonnaise Kill a Jedi? Or in this case, oh my god, Tarkin, stop killing everybody!
Like, why do you keep killing everybody?
Stop! He's already dead! But no, like, any closing statements, Anna?
Oh, happy life day, everybody.
Happy life day. May the Force be with you and all of the million other goodbyes in Star Wars or greetings in Star Wars.
Let the hate flow through you and this is the way.
Anyway, have a wonderful rest of your day. And we will see you in 2025. Bye-bye!
Adios!